Thanks, Annie.
Thanks. Thanks, Annie. I'm Tabika and I'm an addict.
Well, Tabika.
Oh my God, I feel so nervous. I wish we'd swap places. I would quite happily have done the 15-minute one. And I came in here and I was feeling so nervous and so frightened about having to do this chair that my kind of immediate default position was to kind of sit in the corner. I didn't tell anyone that I was here. I'd kind of bunkered down, I'd sheltered in. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want anyone to talk to me. It was me against the world. And this is just because I don't want to do a chair. And Annie had to come and find me and say, the chair hasn't turned up. And I was like, oh, actually, it's me. And I'm kind of sat there. and that's what I do when I'm frightened. And during the break, a couple of people came and talked to me. And, you know, I suddenly feel I can breathe again. I found words to say. I can suddenly remember my experience. I don't feel like a fraud sitting here. And it's amazing. It really is amazing what happens here. You know, to be able to change from that kind of frightened animal ready to attack and not wanting to be noticed, to being able to sit here and feel whatever I'm feeling and kind of be okay with it. And that is an amazing, profound change that happened in like 20 minutes. And those are that is the power of these rooms, and has continued to be my experience for a really long time. Okay, I got that out of the way. 5 minutes almost now. So actually, I was talking to someone in the break, and I kind of forget it, but I kind of remembered as I was talking to him. And you know, what is amazing, and it was my experience too, that I had tried to get clean numerous times. I'd done lots of different things. Never thought about coming to NA. Never thought about giving up drugs. I'd done, like, you know, I'd done clucks and weird detoxes that I'd invented myself that were kind of not very helpful. But I had tried lots of ways to stop. And then when I came to NA, the obsession to use was lifted a day at a time. And it's amazing. It was the first time that that had ever happened, where even though I wanted to use, something would happen that would prevent me from using. And even as recent as last year, I went to Peru for... I went travelling, and I went to Peru for like 2 months. And it's a country that I've always wanted to visit. And I've got this, you know, I've always had it in my head that I've always wanted to meet I'm a bit of a hippie. I really believe in kind of like cosmos and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm really, you know, like, I love like cosmic things to a degree. I don't like the kind of unhygienic bit. But, you know, I kind of like that whole kind of cosmic hippie thing. And I was in Peru, and I always had this idea that I'd love to meet the shamans and, you know, take the medicine, which is ayahuasca, which is a massive hallucinogen. But they call it medicine out there, and kind of, you know, talk to the medicine women and, you know, kind of really understand, really connect to Mother Earth again. You know, and I feel that our society has kind of really cut the cords, and I really want to connect back to Mother Earth. And I'm in Peru, and I kind of find myself in the Sacred Valley, and, you know, I'm feeling quite sacred now, and I'm looking up into these ancient mountains, I'm practicing my yoga, I'm, you know, it's feeling really amazing and really cosmic. And everyone around me is talking about seeing the medicine woman around the corner. Are you going to drink the medicine? I say, listen, you know, the thing is, I don't do drugs and I don't drink alcohol. And they're like, yeah, it's not drugs. And I'm like, no, I know it's not, but I practice something even weirder than that, whereby I don't even smoke a spliff, even though that's not drugs. In the normal world, smoking spliffs, drinking alcohol, taking ayahuasca is not drugs. So I'm like, you know, I practice an even more kind of rigid thing than that. Anyway, they're like, you know, but you need to challenge those beliefs. Why would you believe in something like that? Yeah, and without having to disclose my whole story, I start to think, you know, I kind of go away, I start thinking, why do I practice this? You know, I've been clean for a long time, and I definitely want to stay clean, and it's not about going back to being a junkie again. You know, I never want to go back to that. You know, I've had a good period away from that. I definitely don't want to go back to that. But, you know, this is about opening your mind. This is about connecting to Mother Earth. You know, I don't know if I'm connecting to Mother Earth in recovery. You know, I'm going to meetings, I'm sharing the message, I'm doing service, I'm, you know, lots of profound changes have taken place, but now I really want to connect to Mother Earth. I'm searching for something. And I'd taken the 12 by 12. It's, sorry, that's not NA approved. It's another thing. But, you know, our literature kind of comes from that. Anyway, it was a skinny book, and I was like, right, I'll just take that book to travel. So I was, you know, I was kind of reading this book, and then I kind of meet these other girls, and they're talking about taking medicine. But now these are psychiatrists. They've just qualified from this really hippie university in Colorado that I'm really interested in, that I've just read about, that I'm, you know, I'm just like, oh my God, like, I've met these girls. They're going off to take this medicine. It's more of a scientific experiment now. I'm like, you know, this has definitely not got anything to do with drugs. This has not got anything to do with my using. You know, this is now a spiritual, scientific experiment that I'm about to embark on. You know, they say in recovery you shouldn't limit yourself. I'm like, you know, I need to think outside the box. I need to expand my horizons. And I'm kind of on the edge now. I'm kind of like, you know, I've really talked myself into this thing. Like, it's definitely not used and it's a scientific experiment. Everyone's doing it. That's my blanket justification for most things. Oh, everyone's doing it. Don't be so... Do it. Everyone's doing it. And that, actually, that justifies a lot of bad behaviour too, but... especially when it comes to doing my tax return. So I'm kind of now at the brink, and it's like, I've been coming to meetings for a really long time, and I definitely don't want to use. It's not on the cards, irrespective of what's happened, and a lot's happened. But already I'm just like, you know, it's not using, it's fine. And funnily enough, the thing that actually stopped me using wasn't that 12 by 12, even though it's a great book. I was reading this autobiography by a poet called Allen Ginsberg, and he brought Buddhism to America, kind of, not really, but, you know, he really advocated it. And he had had an interview with the Dalai Lama, and he'd said, listen, you know, have you tried all these hallucinogenic drugs? They're amazing. They're really going to expand your mind. You know, that journey to enlightenment becomes much shorter. You can kind of get there through this portal. You know, it's amazing. And the Dalai Lama says, no, you know what? It's about consistency. It's about discipline. It's about, and they found it through meditation. And I was like, okay, I can take wisdom from him. If I don't know what I'm doing, I can. And it was just funny that I kind of found it in this book, and I just thought, actually, that's what I've been doing in my life. I've been coming to meetings consistently, and I have been disciplined in so much as I try and work the steps, I try and come to meetings regularly, and it's the most disciplined I've ever been about something, and the most committed I've ever been about something. And I just thought, you know, I thought it was amazing, like, the way it kind of just came at me, like this curveball, like, you know, where did that come from? Like, you know, I definitely don't want to use to, like, yeah, I'm definitely going to do ayahuasca and go up to the jungle and spend, like, 10 days with this shaman medicine man, you know, puking up and doing all sorts of things. And so sometimes I come to meetings and people share about their experience at drugs, and I just think, yeah, you know, I definitely don't want to use drugs. I don't relate to that. And then, you know, suddenly it's like, oh, I want to, you know, I want to eat ayahuasca, or I want to. And then I think, well, you know, what caused that? And I think, oh, my dad died, you know, a few months before. Do I think the two might be connected? Maybe. You know, and I don't know. You know, I guess it was just a story that hit me. And I do sometimes come to, you know, this year it's going to be 15 years since I've been coming to NA, and I've managed to stay clean by coming just to these meetings. And, you know, sometimes I go to meetings and I think, oh, you know, I don't relate to the drug stuff. I haven't taken drugs for ages. and then someone will talk about some kind of madness that they've done or something that's going on in their head. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm 15 years clean, and I'm there. Oh my God, I did it yesterday, or I did it last week, or, and that's the stuff that has changed a lot, you know. And I can, and it's amazing. Like, you know, I talked about the discipline. You know, I can pray, I can do a meditation, I can do a reading in the morning. I can feel really spiritual. I get in my car, someone cuts me up, and I'm off. You know, I've become a lunatic again. I don't care about anything. I'm going to do something bad. I've gone mad. And, you know, that madness just kind of gets toned down, but it's still quite prevalent. Anyway, I I'm not going to be modest and say, you know, I've been clean for a little while. I've been clean for ages. You know, a few years is going to be like half my life. And it's a really long time to stay committed to something. And I was, and I've been thinking recently, you know, why do I keep coming back to meetings? And especially, you know, like, I didn't want to do the chair today. I felt really frightened. I was like, you know, I don't want to open up. I don't want to, you know, I've been telling my story for ages. It's really boring. I'm bored of it. You know, and I can really talk myself out of being here, of wanting to connect to people. Oh, don't want to talk to him. These are all people I don't know, by the way. You know, I just don't want to talk to people. You know, and I can kind of get into this really strange space. And I keep coming to meetings because I get really inspired by people. I got clean by coming to meetings. I didn't go into a treatment centre. And, I don't know whether I would advise that or advocate that. It was just my experience. It was horrible. It was really tough. I detoxed myself. I just scored some methadone on the street and just detoxed myself. After a few days, I thought I was going to get addicted to the methadone, and I chucked it out the window and down the sink and got rid of all my supplies and just had the most horrendous cluck that seemed to last for about 2 months. And I was just on my own. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I was going mad. And people just kept saying, goes for another meeting. And all I could think was like, oh my God, I just need to get run over because this is almost unbearable. I just need to like recoup and recover in a ward. I can't think about even feeding myself or eating because I can't feel so sick. All I want to do is smoke just to, you know, try and hold it together because I'm on a mental and physical meltdown and the spiritual side hasn't even been addressed. I don't even know what is going on. And it was, you know, it was so tough. You know, I was going to meetings. I was really frightened. I thought everyone hated. That's my immediate thing. Everyone hates me. So I hate everyone. That's like the immediate, like as soon as I meet people, I hate you, you hate me. Okay, now we know where we're at. Let's have a conversation. And it's funny actually because I always say, you know, I came in. I was kind of all right when I came in. That's what I say to people, and then they're like, yeah, you didn't look that great. And I was like, yeah, I was probably like less than 6 stone. I didn't blow, I went the other way. It's like less than 6 stone. And I thought, you know, and I'm definitely not paranoid, I've kind of got my wits about, you know, about me, like I'm kind of going to meet and staying clean. And I remember people quite gently suggesting, you know, why don't you try a rehab centre, why don't you try and get into rehab? Maybe you could do with a day programme, that might help you. And so this is me thinking I'm not paranoid. I go to a clinic called Sharp, I think it was called at the time, and I go for this assessment, and they say, right, so what's your problem? I'm like, right, I can't. I say, right, first of all, I need to know, if you get subpoenaed to give evidence against me in a court of law, are you going to reveal what is said in this interview? This guy's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, I need to know that before we can proceed. He's just like, but hang on, you've come here. I'm like, I know, but I just need to establish it. Anyway. So he says, if I get subpoenaed, you know, we have got this client confidentiality, we don't have to breach it in a court of law. I'm like, okay, fine. So he's like, what's your problem? I said, well, you know, when I was 15, I dropped a few tabs of acid. It's like, okay, you're like 21 now, so has there been anything else? It's like, No, I shoplifted a few times too. I shoplifted quite a lot actually. I think that's probably my problem. Yeah. And he's like, but you've come in here to try and get assessment to be helped for drugs? And I was like, yeah, you know, and maybe it might just be shoplifting. And I was just too paranoid to tell someone that I had a drug problem and that I needed help. And went through this whole kind of charade with this guy. And then he was just like, look, we can't help you. You know, from what you've told us, you just don't fit any of the criteria. And I was like, really? Like, really, you know, shocked. And I thought I was, well, you know, I've come in totally delusional, and I think I'm doing really well. But fortunately, I managed to stay clean. I managed to stay clean by coming to meetings. And I got a sponsor really quickly after I got clean, it was advised. And I managed to find a girl who had just moved here, so she was quite needy. I was really needy, and that combination worked quite well. So I got to hang out with her lots and not feel that uncomfortable about it. And I just, you know, I found it really difficult to talk to people. I found it really difficult to share. I found it really difficult to open myself up. You know, I was still so protected. I was still so scared. I still thought, you know, it was me against the world. And I just carried that everywhere. And I felt so, I remember those meetings, I felt so uncomfortable. Like, you know, if someone moved next to me or if the chair moved next to me, I'd be so self-conscious. But, oh my God, everyone's looking at me. Sit really still. Don't even blink. You know, like just nuts. Or, you know, like, oh my God, I'm dying to pee. Don't get up. Don't get up. Don't get up. You know, and I felt so uncomfortable. I couldn't, you know, I didn't want to do anything on my own. I kind of like just run home and just kind of like sit there and smoke cigarettes and cry and call my youths and friends because I didn't know what else to do. And it was honestly a miracle that I stayed clean. You know, the things that I did, the situations I got myself involved in the first year, it was just a miracle that I stayed clean. But I did keep coming to meetings, and I managed to go to a lot of meetings. Amazingly, all the people that I met in that first year are still all my closest friends today. And we've all stayed clean. And, you know, and it's amazing. You know, we've now got this incredible history together. And we kind of laugh about the old days and, you know, when life was simple, we say. And you know, it's just been such an amazing journey. I mean, there are so many incredible things that have happened, and there are just so many kind of crazy things that have happened. And, you know, my journey definitely wasn't straightforward. I mean, I haven't used since I got clean, and I honestly don't know how that's happened. But, there were lots of things that I didn't do, but there were lots of things that I did do. And I found people that were staying clean, that had a lot of clean time and that were doing service. You know, I remember meeting this guy who was 10 years clean at the time I just got clean. I was convinced he hated me. Anyway, one day my paranoia got the better of me and I just went up to him at a cafe. I was like, you hate me, don't you? He was like, no, I don't. And then we became best friends. And I remember like getting to like a year clean. I was just like, come on, let's do something else. It's so boring going to meetings. Meetings are so boring. I just can't listen to anyone anymore. And he's like, listen, I've been going for like 11 years, and I still go. And he was like, you know, you just need to get over it and go to meetings. He said, you know, if you want to stay clean and you want to carry on and feel okay, you need to come to meetings. And so that was kind of embedded in me really early on. And the other thing that really helped was I met people very early on in the program that helped, that I really liked, that I could relate to. When I got clean, most of my peer group were at least 10 years older than me. And whilst they were quite cool with hanging out for like coffee and, you know, having dinners afterwards, I wanted a bit more adventure. I was like, really, are we going to do that again? Can we go to a party? And I'm like, yeah, we're not really up for it. I was like, oh, God. And I managed to find some people you know, that were a bit younger, a bit more my age, and we just, you know, we bonded, and they really helped me get to meetings for three years. There were three of us. We were inseparable. You know, we went everywhere together. We did everything together. We fell out. We laughed. We cried. And that helped. That transition. It's hard. You know what? It's hard getting clean. It's hard, and I found it really lonely. And that transition of leaving behind everything that I'd known, even though I was only 21, and actually I didn't know that much, I found that really hard to let go of those people. They were people I trusted. They would have stabbed me in the back, but they were the people that I trusted. I couldn't trust them, but they were the people that I trusted. You know, they were the people that I'd felt safe with, even though I didn't feel safe. Nice, full of those parodies. And I found it really difficult. I found it difficult to come in here and make new friends, open myself up to people, say, this is how I'm feeling. Talking about feeling. It's taken me a really long time to feel comfortable with that. To say, you know, how are you? Great. How are you? Maybe half an hour into the conversation with, like, a really good friend, I'm like, actually, you know what? I'm not great. But I'm really bad, you know, really bad day. This has happened. It's getting better. I'm slowly catching up. But, you know, I found that really hard. So I found it quite difficult to connect to people. Everyone was talking about their feelings, and I was just like, oh, my God. you know, just couldn't relate. And I guess I spent a long time quite shut down. I didn't really know what was going on around me, but I was so frozen, and I really thought, God, I've got clean so young, I'm going to be out of here in a couple of years with all the joy, all the knowledge, like, done, dusted, compartmentalized, see you later, thank you, you know, it was great to get clean, thank you, moving on and upwards. And clearly that hasn't been my experience, and, you know, and I'm still here, and, you know, and it's amazing, like, the baggage that I thought I never had is just, like, the last couple of years, I've suddenly just found it so heavy, so burdensome. And emotionally, I think I find it more difficult now just because of what's opened up and what's come to the surface, and, you know, there's lots of stuff that's needed to be healed. You know, I find it more difficult now than I did then. But with that comes, you know, with that has come some clarity. There are things that I've had to do in recovery that I never thought I'd be able to do. My father died 2 years ago, and when I went to see him in hospital, I just thought he'd gone into hospital, he was going to get better and come out. And I went to see him in hospital, and on his chart, it said cirrhosis of the liver from excessive drinking, 25 years of excessive drinking. I had no idea my father was an alcoholic. I mean, I went to the doctor. I said, Daddy, what's on this? Why have they written that? It's like, oh, darling, I don't know. I mean, he's nuts. He was completely nuts. Oh, darling, I don't know. So I went to the doctor. So I was like, I'm sorry, this is wrong. You need to test him for other things because he's not an alcoholic. He's never had a drink in his life. Maybe he has had one. You know, but we were convinced as a family that he had never had a drink. You know, and he died within a few months of cirrhosis of the liver. And he lived in India at the time, and a few people have been to India. Well, we were talking about being in India. It's a pretty crazy country. And it's a pretty crazy country to be there as a tourist, just like hanging out, having a bit of a laugh. It's really crazy if you've got to suddenly do, like, really serious things and go through their bureaucratic system that is just insurmountable. And, you know, it was really, really tough. My family fell apart. They didn't know what to do. They couldn't get it together. And I had to galvanise everyone. I had to say, right, okay, we've got to get this done. We've got to do it. Let's do it. And we had, you know, I had to do some really, really horrendous things. And there was just no way that I would have had the strength of character to be able to do that before. You know, when I got clean, I couldn't cope with anything. You know, can I get to a doctor's appointment on time? No. Then I'd have to call the doctor at 5 minutes before my appointment and listen, you know, My cat's had an accident. I've got to, you know, something crazy. I left something at home. I've got to go. My keys. I've got some, you know, like it was all so unmanageable. Found it really difficult to just cope with, you know, quite small things. I mean, that was on a physical level. On an emotional level, you know, my boyfriend would say, listen, we've got a problem. We need to talk. I'd be like, I don't have a problem. What do we need to talk about? You know, just, oh, no emotional capacity. And then there I was, you know, having to deal with my family and having to deal with this really awful, emotionally stressful situation in India. And, you know, like all good addicts and alcoholics, he was unmanageable. His life was a mess. He was nuts. I mean, there were just so many things to deal with on so many levels. I think I definitely came back traumatised. But, you know, still able to deal with the situation. And I'm just going to talk a bit about my relationships with my family. When I got clean, I didn't like my family. They didn't like me. I didn't like, you know, that's back to that whole thing. They didn't like me. I didn't like them. They just didn't understand me. They didn't get me. You know, I was different. I was more, you know, I was like in this other cosmic universe, and I don't know really where they were, and they just didn't understand me. And I was always perplexed by that, and I always, my default setting was just to attack. You know, they didn't get it. And, like, you know, when I was using, I'd try and spend time with my family, with my sister, and you know, one thing that sticks out in particular was I was like, right, you know, let's do something normal. Let's go and have lunch. So, you know, I'd stay up all night because, you know, what if I was late? So I'd be using all night. Then I'd have to use loads to get through the lunch with her because I found her really difficult. Then she'd say, so we'd, you know, have lunch together. I wasn't eating. Then she'd say, oh, you know, let's have a little mooch about the shops. We'd be like, okay, yeah, let's have a little mooch about the shops. You know, like doing this little sisterly thing, me and my sister having lunch, going shopping, we're normal. You know, then I'd like nick something from the shop, then the alarm would go off. Then she'd say, did you steal something from the shop? We'd be like, what? Of course I didn't. Then I'd have to convince her and convince me and have to stage this whole dramatic thing. Then she'd go home and tell my mother how embarrassed she was and how this awful thing had happened. Then my mother would call me. Then I'd have to lie to my mother and just say she's out to get me. And then I'd just be like, my family don't get me. You know, they've definitely got it in, you know, like, it's an unworkable situation. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do with, there was just, I didn't know what to say, or I didn't know how to make that situation better. You know, it was difficult. So much had happened. And, you know, there was only so much forgiveness. And, you know, whilst I had isolated myself, you know, I also had created a lot of problems there. And it was you know, I felt too guilty to go back in. It was probably a lot of it. And, you know, I don't know. I just stayed clean. And, you know, the first speaker was talking about his family. And, you know, I went on holiday with my family a few weeks ago, and it was so nice. And that's just been such an amazing part of my recovery that, you know, when I was with my family, it was so reactionary. Oh, my God, they said that. You know, I've now said that. Oh, my God, we're having a blazing row, and it's over ice cream, or something ridiculous. How did that happen? How did it suddenly go from, like, hiya, to, like, having this full-on blazing row? And, you know, a lot has been healed. And I haven't done anything. I've just come to meetings. And I have changed. And that change I've been able to bring to my relationships. And my family is so important to me. We're so close. We do so much together. Like, my sister and I speak to each other almost every day. She now lives in Portugal. You know, she's coming to stay with me next week. You know, and I've kind of got this family back that I never had before. You know, I wasn't able to be a part of the family, and I felt that I wasn't included in the family. You know, and I guess the thing is, so much of this crap that goes on comes from me. It comes from my thinking and my perspective. And someone shared this thing in the meeting that I thought was so funny. I'm going to steal it and share it now. And he said, you know, I look at my life and it's great. You know, I've kind of got this relationship. I've got this great home. I drive a car that I like. I'm, you know, my job's great. You know, I feel really present. And he said, you know, then I think about my life and it's shit. And I was just like, you know, that is how it is. You know, when I start thinking about things or my, you know, the perspective can just get so distorted. There's no point. What's the point? You know, now I don't think about using it. I just think, oh, I just might as well kill myself. You know, I love that. I love that, but I might as well just kill myself. Like, you know, just like that. Just whatever, having a bad day. Get used, might as well just kill myself. Stay in bed all day. Whatever. And that stuff, you know, is still there. You know, it can still be so powerful. It can still be so debilitating. And I guess it's just that amazing disparity, like so much has changed. Like when I tell people that don't know me and don't know anything about me, about how I used to be and what I used to do, they're just like, no way. I think, no way. They're like, no way. And I'm almost unrecognisable. And the unrecognisable part is in my behaviour, my mannerisms, my interactions with people and with and with my life and how I live. And they have been really, really profound changes that have happened to me since I've been coming to NA. And when I say, you know, when I think NA saved my life, I don't just mean physically. I don't mean like, you know, I was really unwell. I was less than 6 stone. But I definitely had a few years of using in me, I think. You know, just spiritually, I was just rock bottomed. I was just so, you know, I was so gone. But I just mean on a day-to-day basis, you know, my life is so less destructive. I don't make those destructive decisions. You know, I've got a huge bank of really good experiences of being able to interact with people in a really different way, of people responding to me in a really different way, of life, you know, delivering in a really different way. And that's been amazing. You know, the saving the life is really the saving the soul, the spirit. And the other thing that I want to say before, is it 20 past? I have to stop. 5 minutes. You know, the other thing I want to say before I stop is when I got clean, I really struggled with the concept of a higher power. I initially thought it meant God. I was definitely, you know, I was sent to convent school all my life. You know, God was just, you know, God was lots of things that I really wasn't into and I didn't want to be into. And I just, you know, I kind of went on with the steps and I was just like, yeah, I don't really believe in this, but I'm going to kind of give it a go. And, you know, quite quickly I realised that actually, you know, the higher power for me was the group. I'm quite a practical person. I like things to be practical. I want to know that if I'm doing something, it's actually going to work. You know, that I can actually see the benefits in my life. I think spiritual life should be a practical life. And I knew that when I came to meetings, I did, sometimes I felt better. Actually, a lot of the time I felt better. I felt connected. I'd come in, like I did today, thinking it's not okay. Everything's not okay. I'm not okay. You're not okay. I don't want to interact with you. And then someone talks to me and it kind of just dissolves. And I'm okay. They're okay. We're okay. Life's okay. Oh, my God. I'm human again. And I was like, well, that's a really practical understanding for me. And it's kind of strange because, you know, the last few years, it has been challenging, you know, and I would love to just say that everything has just been, you know, really rosy and amazing. And And that hasn't been my experience. It's been really hard here, you know. That idea has been challenged. You know, when my father died, I felt like I didn't feel anonymous in NA. But that's because I kept going to the same meetings. And, you know, I live in a certain area and there are lots of meetings in that area. And I only go to, like, 3 meetings in that area. And they've been, like, the same meetings for years. So, I mean, part of the problem was me not diversifying. But, you know, I didn't feel anonymous. I didn't want to talk to people about it. And I kind of... I really did shrink away from meetings. And I just thought, meetings aren't really my solution anymore. I don't feel that sense of higher power there anymore. I don't feel like it's my practical solution. You know, I kind of go there, I'm shut down, I'm closed off, don't talk to me, don't look at me. And it's funny, I, for some reason, I don't know why, it kind of just swings in roundabouts, but I've been asked to do a lot of chairs, and they're at meetings that I don't really know anyone. And I've been really moved, actually. I've been really moved again. Just by people's kindness, just by what people say. Like, they don't even know they're saying it. They're just like, hiya. No. No. There's just something really amazing that does happen here. And I think it's an exchange of love. And suddenly, from being quite frightened and angry, I suddenly feel love towards somebody, and I feel like they're reciprocating. You know, and it's not a weird sexual love, it's just like this kind of spiritual generic thing. And I've, you know, I've really started to feel it again at these meetings, and it's really nice. You know, it's nice to know that I always come back here, and, you know, and this is the place that I'm meant to be, and all of that stuff is still there. And you know, NA is big enough to be able to freak out, not go to whatever you want to do, and it's always there for whenever you want to come in. And, you know, just that fellowship is so, it's just so important to me, because the isolation, this is where your head just attacks you, you know, that's the killer. And so, you know, my higher power has been the group. It's been practical. It's a really practical application of this program for me. You know, and it's worked. You know, so many things have happened for me here. And I've just become such a different person. Not unrecognisable, because I still get in the car, I still act like a psycho, get terrible road rage, da-da-da-da. I could tell you all about my flaws. I'm not going to talk about step 6, because look, I've run out of time. So, you know, it's just really nice to be here. It's really nice to be part of this fellowship. All the people that have come for the convention, I really hope you enjoy your weekend here. I've really found people in NA to be really friendly and really open to me, even when I haven't felt like that at all, and I've wanted them to leave me alone. And it's really helped me come back. Leave it there, thanks.